ASAP. Any score, any place. We'll pull up on your boat, gang, or don't bang.
Bro, who's making this shit? No, who did this?
Let's go. Come on.
I'm so tired from watching.
90-yard touchdown. 90-yard touchdown.
What is up and welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. I'm your host, Daniel Wade, joined as always by my co-host, David Drogemeyer, and we're two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, and we've been covering the Chargers now for over five seasons doing our own Facebook live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season, and now this is our third season as the hosts of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. All right, guys, well, we are changing it up a little bit today because on yesterday's show, I know it was just the ultimate division crossover, and it's going to be more of that today as we are going to be talking about the Broncos on today's show with the rest of the AFC West hosts. But one thing I want to do, especially since there's some news today, is give you guys just a little bit of Chargers-specific news before you get into the rest of the show, because I know the show was a little bit shorter yesterday, so this one will be more of a regular size show. And we do have some news today because Chargers safety Roderick Teamer was suspended for the first four games of the 2020 season, so we're going to get into the impact of that before getting into the Broncos with Locked On Broncos host Cody Rourke and the rest of the AFC West guys, Ryan Tracy and your boy Q, about the expectations this year, all the young players and speed they added, and much more. So you're going to want to stick around for that. But let's go ahead and get into it. On Monday, it was reported that one Los Angeles Chargers player is going to be suspended for the first four games of the 2020 season. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogemeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. On Monday, NFL insider from ESPN Adam Schefter reported that Chargers safety Roderick Teamer has been suspended without pay for the first four games of the 2020 regular season for violating the NFL policy on substance abuse. So this is definitely news for the Chargers, not news any Chargers fan wants to see at this time of the year. If the Chargers are making news right now, it's probably not a good thing. But Roderick Teamer was a success story of 2019. He was one of the undrafted free agents that ended up making the Chargers roster as a guy that was a huge underdog, and he ended up being forced into the action with the injuries to Derwin James and then his backup, Adrian Phillips. Roderick Teamer ended up playing defensively in seven games last year and starting six of those games at strong safety. And now, David, a guy the Chargers probably looked at going into the season as a key reserve guy and a guy who would play some special teams for them, is going to miss the first four games in 2020.
Yeah, Teamer definitely was a success story according to his undrafted free agent status. He worked hard and he made the team on a very stacked defense. Last year, he put up some respectable stats. He had 40 tackles, one sack, and one interception in limited duty. Roderick Teamer saw his playing time decrease as guys like Jalen Watkins came in and played very well as guys in front of him returning like Derwin James and Adrian Phillips. He also had some lapses in coverage, and that was evidenced by his PFF coverage grade of 49.8. Going into this year, although he is going to miss the first four games, he is eligible to participate in all preseason practices and games, and he will be eligible to return to the roster on October 5th.
Yeah, which as of right now is week five. As we see it, obviously, if games are pushed back or reduced or any of those things, we'll see how that affects his suspension, but he's definitely going to be missing some time, and he'll have to use that practice time to try and prove that he should stick around, David, because I think another consequence of this four-game suspension is not just missing the first four games of the season, but it could potentially be him missing a roster spot, because he did have a lot of very up-and-down play last year, and he was an undrafted rookie, so some of that is to be expected. But he went into this as the unquestioned backup for Derwin James, at least until he lost that spot to someone else. And now going into this season, I think it's a fair question to ask, with this suspension, if he's even going to make the team.
Yeah, definitely a fair question, because this isn't the first incident that Roderick Teamer has been involved in. Before the Chargers' Week 14 road game against the Jacksonville Jaguars, Roderick Teamer and Denzel Perriman were both suspended and sent home for violating team rules. So he already has an uphill battle to climb. Derwin James is coming back healthy, and also the Chargers went out and got a safety in the sixth round out of Notre Dame by the name of Alohi Gilman, which the coaching staff has already said they like the way he plays defense and could fit into that Adrian Phillips role, a role that Roderick Teamer would probably have filled if he was able to play. Couple that with his so-so play last year and his lack of opportunities here this year, Alohi Gilman could step in, take that spot, and Roderick Teamer could be on the outside looking in, and this might spell the end of his NFL career with the Chargers.
It absolutely could. And, you know, there's still practice squad spots, and especially in a season where you don't know what's going to happen if somebody has to be quarantined and all of the bodies that you might need, you could see him stick around in some capacity unless he's picked up by another team. But I definitely think this hurts his chances. And for the Chargers, who were already looking for ways to try to get Alohi Gilman, a guy they really like out of Notre Dame, time on the field, it's only going to mean bad things for Roderick Teamer and definitely a boost for Alohi Gilman. But we do have a few more segments to get into. It's time to switch it over to the Ultimate Division Crossover. Today we are focusing on the Broncos with the rest of the AFC West hosts coming up right after this.
We are continuing day two of our Ultimate Division Crossover here in the AFC West, and we had a special treat right after the Super Bowl where you got to hear all of us talk. You guys got to hear us yesterday where we heard Ryan Tracy break down the Chiefs a little bit to give fans in both the Broncos, the Chargers, and the Raiders divisions a little bit more insight as to what's going on around the AFC West. And we're continuing that Ultimate Division Crossover day is the Broncos-centric focus day. And gentlemen, I'm going to open up the floor to you guys in terms of asking questions about what's it going to be like going against the Broncos this season? And I'm very excited to interact with you guys. So let's roll things out.
So, Cody, what has changed in Denver? One particular area that I wanted to really focus in on was Vic Fangio and him as the head coach. And it's something that I've been very adamant about since he took over. He started off a little slow, but ended the season really, really strong. So what has changed for Vic Fangio in particular that's going to help him get off to a better start in year two?
You know, I would say that it's adding personnel. I mean, the personnel that the Broncos added this offseason has been crazy from a standpoint of getting some veteran defensive linemen, getting Shelby Harris back. I think the Broncos are trying to load up defensively because, as we talked about in yesterday's show, talking about the Chiefs, it's all about how do you keep up with Kansas City offensively. And I think that's the big focal point here for this Broncos team. So in free agency, they go out and they trade for Jarrell Casey of the Tennessee Titans. We saw him have a phenomenal impact against Lamar Jackson and the Baltimore Ravens in that divisional matchup there. And he's going to be one of those guys that can create the interior penetration because he could be a guy that lines up in a five tech. He could be a guy that lines up on the interior. And as we saw in the Super Bowl, the key, I think, to maybe kind of slowing down Kansas City a little bit is being able to have great edge players, but also having great interior pass rush. And I think Jarrell Casey gives the Broncos that best boost. So they've added up there defensively. They lost Chris Harris Jr., but they acquired A.J. Boye via trade. And so now they've kind of replaced some of those options. Kareem Jackson's back. Justin Simmons is about to be locked up on a long-term deal by the July 15th deadline here in just about a week or so. So for the Broncos, I think things are looking up defensively for them, but they've gotten better there too. Now, what else has changed in terms of Vic Fangio? I think his demeanor. I think more so he's brought in some more familiarity on his defensive coaching staff. Now, John Pagano is the outside linebacker coach after they lost Brandon Staley, who went over for the Los Angeles Rams and took over there. So really, I think it's about putting experience together on the coaching staff and also adding some personnel defensively. So I imagine that Vic Fangio's defense probably is going to be another strong point in 2020.
It's hard to imagine a Broncos team without a good defense, I think, at this point. Like, it's just one of those things where you just always assume they're going to make it work. And, I mean, you having Vic Fangio, you know, defensive guy like that, obviously makes things a lot easier. But I think one thing that has changed since the last time we talked was just the team's commitment to Drew Lock, right? I mean, we'll get into the speed and all, you know, all the speed they added to try to keep up in this division. But I think just when you look at the draft, when you look at free agency, bringing in Melvin Gordon, all of the weapons they added offensively in the draft. I mean, can you just talk about like what it's been like? Anyone can say anything. Anyone can voice vocal support for a guy. But I think since we last talked, we saw the Broncos actually put their money down on Drew Lock, and then just fill the rest of the team in around him.
Yeah, that's been the focus point, right? Because the Broncos offensively last year, I mean, we talked about it after that Super Bowl win for Kansas City. We talked about, you know, the Broncos ever want to have a chance to put up points, they've got to be able to be more consistent offensively. You look at some of the weapons they have. Noah Fant, a first-round tight end who really came into his own last year. Cortland Sutton, who just took a massive step from year one to year two, and now he's the alpha dog. He's the wide receiver one entering 2020. And outside of that, you didn't have a lot of contribution outside of there. Philip Lindsay literally had to crawl for every inch of that 1,000-yard season last year, and they just didn't have a lot of consistency from the other skill guys there. So now the Broncos, they go out there and they surround Drew Lock. I mean, for me to be able to look at the moves that they've made, if they're so convinced that Drew Lock could be the guy, they surrounded him with every potential weapon possible, in my opinion. And if Drew Lock can't perform with all these weapons added, then it tells me he may not be the guy, right? I think that's going to be a really big test for this Broncos team in 2020. Can you factor in Jerry Jeudy, who arguably was the best route runner in the 2019-2020 NFL draft, and for him to be able to come in and be that wide receiver two inside the slot or even on the other side opposite of Cortland Sutton, I think with his ability to create separation, I think is going to be very valuable for the Broncos, especially against some of those teams that like to play man coverage. They like to play press. He's very good at manipulating defenses. He can read coverages. He expressed that to us in an interview, actually. So I'm looking forward to seeing that. But then they go in and they add KJ Hamler, who runs ridiculous 4.3 speed out of Penn State. I imagine him playing inside the slot a lot for this Broncos team. But really, we talked about it yesterday with Ryan, is that the NFL is a copycat league, right? And I think that the Broncos, I think John Elway, I think that they've copied a little bit of what Kansas City wants to do, because they've seen that if you have speed and you have guys, a lot of guys you can distribute the ball to, and you also have running backs that can run, you can have established balance all across the board. And for the Broncos, I think that's exactly what they aim for this offseason. And on paper, they've done that. Now, the regular season is going to be a big test.
I'm looking forward to seeing it, to tell you the truth, because I agree with you. I think that balance is key, and I think John Elway's done a good job. I like what they did in the draft. I'm looking forward to talking about that in a little bit, but Elway specifically, I know there's been turmoil in the organization. I feel like going out and trading for multiple players this offseason and adding what I think is an interesting risk in Melvin Gordon. Tell me, where is John Elway in this organization? Is he fighting for longevity, or is this just standard where he's going next?
That's a great question. You know, John always tells us when we sit in our media sessions with him that, you know, he wants the Broncos to compete for a world championship. He wants them to be competitive. And there's been some talk over the last couple of seasons about the Broncos rebuilding. Now, John Elway wasn't going to come out and admit and say, hey, look, we're rebuilding. But it's very evident when you look at since 2015, when the Broncos won Super Bowl 50, Von Miller, Brandon McManus, Todd Davis, Jeff Heuerman, who was on IR. Those are the only players left over from that Super Bowl winning team. So you look at all the change that has happened since then, they have definitely rebuilt. Now, it's been a quiet rebuild. Now, obviously, you know, competing in the AFC West, the Chiefs have taken over that division since Peyton Manning stepped down. And it's all about maybe trying to, I think, climb their way back in. John Elway said it best. Our goal, first and foremost, yeah, we want to compete for world championship, but we got to learn how to beat the Chiefs, we got to learn how to beat the Chargers, we got to learn how to beat the Raiders, we got to win the division first. I like that approach there. Now, the last two draft classes, and I think this one, if you count it on paper, I think have been really well for the Broncos. Now, it's all about how can you build longevity with a very, very young football team. Ryan, my biggest concern that I have for the Broncos this year, offensively, I think that with all the youth that they have, it can be great, but I think it could also be their biggest kryptonite, because we talk about the inexperience factor. Now you're going against guys in the NFL, defenses that, and defense coordinators have a lot of experience. It's really going to ride on Drew Lock and the coaches, I think, to put together a game plan week in and week out that are going to tailor-made to the strengths of their players rather than asking them to do something that maybe they can't do.
You know, Cody, just kind of piggybacking off of what you just said right there, how much is the Bronco or are the Broncos going to be affected by COVID-19, by the fact that they didn't have rookie minicamp, they don't have OTAs, they don't have any of that, and so they have a lot of youth coming in, but that youth hasn't had any opportunity to play, hasn't had any opportunity to do anything. They're going to have to rely pretty heavily, at least I believe the whole NFL is going to rely heavily on veterans this year. Do the Broncos have enough veterans to kind of be able to put their arm around the young guys and say, here, young rook, follow me and I'll show you how to get there?
That's a great question. A couple weeks ago on Lockdown Broncos, I talked about that. I said, you know, who out of the AFC West needs training camp the most? I think Denver is the team that does it because, as I mentioned, a young offense. Now, I think the benefit that they've had with them, obviously without there being no mini camp, no OTAs, I think that's going to hurt everybody in the National Football League. But for a team that has a new offensive coordinator, a new offensive system altogether, we saw the new offensive coordinator thing come to fruition when the Chiefs were just absolutely blasting the Houston Texans after being down 24-0. They fired Rick Scangarello during that game, so it was a busy day there. So for them, I think that with a new OC, a new quarterback coach, obviously Drew Lock getting a full offseason of prep as a starter, there's going to be some question marks. It's not the easiest schedule for Denver in 2020. However, I do think that the added benefit of having an experienced coaching staff, all across the board, I think is going to be very critical. Now, if the Broncos had a veteran team with a young coaching staff, I'd be very worried. At the same standpoint, I'm going to flip it around. They have a very young football team with a very experienced coaching staff. I find comfort in that, just knowing the X's and O's of the game and knowing that these coaches are very, very good teachers. They've been able to implement that, and the Broncos have been installing the offense. Now, it hasn't been coach-led because players cannot yet meet or interact with coaches outside of the virtual Zoom meeting capacity. So Drew Lock has been orchestrating these throwing sessions a majority of the summer, since probably about May, with some of the players there, installing the offense, going through the playbook, and teaching guys the concepts there. So they've been running routes on air. They've been running the playbook. And I think that's a good little benefit there. But I do think that adding the coaches to the mix, which we're going to see at training camp hopefully this month, I think that's going to be very, very important, because those coaches need to be able to teach those landmarks. And you got to know that your players are hitting those landmarks in terms of where you're running your routes for your offensive line and pass protection or run blocking, quarterback going through his reads and progressions. Those things that matter the most, I think, are reviewed by coaches. And so right now, I mean, with all the throwing sessions going on, it's really hard to gauge whether or not the Broncos offense is going to be ahead of par due to the fact they've been orchestrating these meetings. So to me, I think that's going to be a big test.
The coronavirus impacted everybody, especially the teams that are needing rookies and younger players and new additions, just changes to come in and play big roles right away, not being able to get acclimated. And you see all these workouts, you're just not really sure, you know, how much that helps compared to what they would normally be doing. But just looking at the Denver Broncos as a whole, I mean, they've added so many pieces through the draft. They added some pieces in free agency. So now that you're seeing basically the net sum of what they've been able to do, Cody, the Broncos going into 2020, are they better than 2019?
I think defensively, I think they will be better, because I do factor in those additions. Look, I think going into free agency, if you were to tell me that Shelby Harris was going to be back in Denver, I was going to tell you that was crazy, because we all thought Shelby Harris was going to be commanding these big market money. You know, we're looking at teams like the Indianapolis Colts or the Minnesota Vikings as two potential teams interested in him. And all of a sudden, his market isn't what I think anybody quite thought it out to be. And so he comes back to Denver. Vic Fangio rings him up and pitches him on a one-year deal. He comes back and he plays, because he had six sacks in 2019. And then you factor in, you get Jarrell Casey from the Tennessee Titans, and really to get him for a seventh round pick, I think is a phenomenal deal. I mean, it's kind of like, it's criminal in a sense of how they were able to get him. Alexander Johnson is also coming back into a full offseason now, being the starter with the wheel backer. Todd Davis back on a contract year here for the Broncos after they picked it up there at the Mike backer. And then I think, you know, your secondary is kind of rounded out a little bit. Kareem Jackson and Justin Simmons at the safety position. Now, Ryan, in yesterday's episode of The Crossover, talked about for Kansas City, you know, not being too worried about the cornerback position because you have the athleticism on the back end. I feel the same way about Denver there. I think A.J. Boye, though, is a very, very good scheme fit for Vic Fangio's defense, and he's a rangy guy. He can tackle. He's very good at reading route concepts and jumping routes. He can play man coverage. He can play zone. He's going to be good there, I believe. I think the biggest question mark for Denver in terms of being better or worse is going to be on the opposite side of cornerback, right? I worry about it. Who's going to be the outside guy? Is it going to be a Devontae Bosby, who's back on a one-year deal? Is it going to be Michael Ojemudia, who they drafted in the third round this year out of Iowa? Is it going to be Isaac Yadam? Is it going to be Devontae Harris? They have 3 to 4 guys right now that could be competing for that outside spot, and I think that, to me, is probably the one area I'm very worrisome defensively. So there's a big question mark there. Offensively, I think they did get better. You know, they get a center out of Lloyd Cushenberry from LSU in round number 3. Then they signed Graham Glasgow to a 4-year deal as their right guard coming over from Detroit, and he's one of the most durable offensive linemen in the National Football League, a big reason why Denver got him. I think that's going to make them better. Melvin Gordon, as Ryan mentioned, I think is kind of like this wild card scenario here. How is he going to play? He mentioned to us that he's got a very big chip on his shoulder. He wants to prove a lot of people wrong. How can both he and Philip Lindsay coexist in the backfield together? And then wide receiver, I think they definitely got better altogether, because you add KJ Hamler, you add Jerry Jeudy. Heck, you even add Tyree Cleveland from Florida in round number 7. And then you have a couple of undrafted guys that could potentially push for a practice squad spot. So they're loaded at wide receiver right now. It's just about how do you get the most established continuity. But I think offensively they got better. Defensively, I think they got better, outside of maybe wondering about that other outside cornerback spot. I think that's really going to be a big question mark. But the question is, how much did it move the meter in terms of competing for the AFC West division? That's going to be a big test, I think, for the Broncos in 2020, because I think every week you're going to be looking at, what did Kansas City do this week? What did Los Angeles do this week? What did Las Vegas do this week? And for the Broncos, they got to worry about themselves, but they also got to be able to keep up with everybody else, in my opinion.
You know, I like the way that you put that. And I want to not I'm sure we'll talk about speed and what these skill positions are going to do for the Broncos, but against this whole division. But before we finish this segment, I want to bring it back because I think probably the most impactful draft pick that was in this class for the Broncos is Lloyd Cushenberry. And that ties into what I think is the biggest concern, and I think might be the limiting factor, is how is this coaching staff, like you mentioned, a new quarterback coach. Everything you can do skill-wise supports the quarterback. The center supports the quarterback. He's got to feel more comfortable than he has in years past. Protection has been an issue. What are they doing on the coaching staff side to help get every little thing that they can get out of Drew Lock?
Yeah, this is a great question. You know, I think it goes to Mike Munchak and really designing a scheme that's really going to be predicated off of getting the ball out quickly. I think in Pat Shurmur's offense, it is designed to be a quick passing offense, not designed to have guys hold onto the ball in the pocket too long like we saw with Joe Flacco. I think in combination, when you mix a little bit of Munchak with Shurmur's scheme, it's going to be designed off of a zone blocking scheme primarily in the run game, and I think it's about identifying what can we best do to keep him upright in pass protection. You know, Garrett Bowles and Elijah Wilkinson, they're going to compete at left tackle, but they have so much depth there too altogether. And you mentioned Lloyd Cushenberry. I think his athleticism and his ability, what he was able to do at LSU, playing in the highest, I mean, ranked offense that we've seen in a long time there, and obviously winning a national championship. He was one of those guys that was a captain on that interior of the offensive lineman, calling out plays. He's going to be critical, though. For him being a young guy and having such a strong responsibility, I think is really going to be on the backs of Mike Munchak and obviously Chris Cooper, the coaches there. They've got to be able to be patient with these guys as well because, look, they're young guys coming over from the NCAA level now to the NFL, where it's just a whole different breed. The game is faster, and they send a lot more at you a lot quicker, and I don't think there's as much room for error on the offensive line as there are for skill positions. So I think really for the coaches, it's about putting a scheme together with the offensive line, with Drew Lock, that's going to put the team in a position to succeed, and I think that's going to be a quick passing game and a zone-blocking running scheme.
Cody, I think with every single team, I have an X factor. There's a guy that I look at and I say, you know what? This dude could be an X factor, or maybe he's a guy that you need to look at and wonder what exactly is he going to bring to the table this upcoming season. And for me and the Broncos, I look at Bradley Chubb. He tore his ACL. I couldn't believe that he was even there around there when the Broncos picked just a couple seasons ago. I just knew he was going to Cleveland, but we all know how that shook out. So he ends up in Denver, has a hell of a season as a rookie. Then he tears his ACL last year. What are the expectations? How does Bradley Chubb bounce back in year three?
That's a great question. And Q, you know, in that week one matchup against the Raiders of 2019, he was playing all over the field. I mean, even though the Broncos, they were struggling against the quick passing offense that John Gruden put together with Derek Carr, Bradley Chubb stood out on game tape. And I made the argument, I felt like if Bradley Chubb played the entire 2019 season, I felt like he would have been an all-pro with just the level he was playing at. So I think for him, ACL, that's a big, big injury for anybody to come off of. I know the Chiefs are experiencing that with Juan Thornhill. Various other players across the division are also experiencing that. Guys coming off ACL injuries. For Bradley Chubb, opposite of Von Miller, I think they got to ease him in at the beginning, right? You know, right now he's running full speed, according to defense coordinator Ed Donatell. But I think that you want to have a nice, consistent balance, right? You don't want to have him in for so many different snap counts if he's not quite up for it. But I do think that the Broncos medical staff will be aware of what he's capable of, what he's not capable of. But I do think that the depth behind Bradley Chubb, I think, is going to be critical with Justin Hollins, with Jeremiah Tauchu, a veteran that's also played in the AFC West before. That, to me, is going to be a big standpoint there. But for me, I think if Bradley Chubb's going to have a bounce back year, look, I imagine him maybe 7, 8 sacks, 9 sacks, I think would be great if you have contributions from guys on the interior of the defensive line. But for me, I think the biggest key is not putting Bradley Chubb out there in coverage a lot, because we saw in Vic Fangio's defense where you blitz the nickel cover guy, you drop that play side edge defender back to that curl to flat area. I would like to see him get after the quarterback, because I think really he does a very damn good job of that, and also being one of the team's best edge run defenders. So I think expectations for him, ease him into it, and I think that if he can ease himself into it and find a little bit of a comfortability coming off of it, because I know there's a mental process to coming off ACL, I think he can have an impact season. I mean, a lot of people are saying that in the national media, he could be a potential comeback player of the year, and I think that would be great for the Broncos. I think it'd be great for Bradley Chubb.
And I think he could be battling that out with Derwin James as well, who has had a very shortened season last year and will probably come back to do big things this season. But now that you've seen, you know, everything that they've done in this offseason, they've obviously added a lot of talent. They seem pretty solid on both sides, but let's look at the expectations for the Broncos this year, because like we've talked about, the theme of everything is just closing that gap between the rest of the AFC West and the Chiefs. So now that you've seen everything, I know you're excited about a lot of those pieces, but is this a year where it's going to, you know, let's see how these players kind of transition and gel with the rest of this group, and then maybe 2021 you can make the leap to being the division champions potentially? Or do you think right now that they are actually legitimately in the hunt to compete for a division crown?
I think if we're looking at it on paper, I think the Broncos have a chance. But, you know, like I said, we can talk about paper projections all year long. I think realistically for the Broncos, and I've talked to a lot of Broncos fans about this, I think if the Broncos come out here, if they go 500 this year, if they go 8-8, I consider that a massive success considering where they've been since Peyton Manning retired. I think that would be a tremendous step forward. They finished 7-9 last season. They started 3-8, and then they won, literally, they won four of their last five games, you know, overall in competition, led by Drew Lock. I think that the expectations, I think, have to be very tempered coming into it. There's a lot of people right now that are coming into it, you know, a lot of Broncos fans getting very excited and saying, look, this is going to be an offense that puts up so many points. Kansas City versus Denver is going to be a massive shootout every single year. I think that if Denver struggles a little bit, look, it's to be expected. They're still a young football team. I think youth in the NFL is so, so important. And I think that there is an adjustment period. And a lot of these guys are new. A lot of these players are new to Denver. So there could be a period where they do struggle. But if they go 500 in 2020, I think that's a massive success. We know with the NFL adding an additional playoff spot, essentially, with a third wild card, the opportunity to get in the AFC playoffs is wide open. We know it's a tough overall conference, but I think the Broncos, you could have three teams maybe representing in the AFC West in the playoffs in 2020. I think it's that good of an entire division. I really do.
I don't disagree with you. I've thought that on and off for the last, going on 4 or 5 years. They seem to be a division in general that bounces back really well. I enjoy that myself. And I'll tell you this. When I look at how the Broncos have to proceed in order, again, to get to the point where they can score points and keep up with the other teams, I come back to, again, who could be your, like, long shot? Who's your sleeper guy? I know that they have speed. We talked about speed. Jerry Jeudy runs great routes. He's got decent speed. Hamler's got speed. Fant's got speed. The guy that sticks out to me is Albert O. And no, I won't try to pronounce his last name. You can try and do that. But tell me, who's your sleeper? Who should these three teams be watching on that Broncos roster?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, Albert Okwuegbunam, I love that. You know, and obviously being a Kansas City guy, I've had to learn that pronunciation very, very quickly. But I like I said, I think he could be an X factor. I think the biggest X factor for Denver, though, I think is going to be, and I don't want to sound cliche here, I think it's going to be Drew Lock. They're going to go as far as he goes. If he struggles, I think they're going to struggle offensively. If he has success, I think that they can go a long ways. But, you know, outside of just the quarterback, because the quarterback's got to make things happen, but who is the players, you know, that are going to be opening it up for him? To me, I think it's Courtland Sutton. He's that X-factor player for this Broncos offensively. I could say Phillip Lindsay, but then again, you know, he's right now not considered the premier back, according to a lot of reports right now. They're looking at Melvin Gordon as being the premier back and then bringing in Phillip Lindsay as a smash and dash guy. So there's a lot of questions right now, but if I had to consider an X-factor player for Denver, it's got to be Courtland Sutton, because as he goes, the offense goes. He's one of those guys that generates momentum. He can make a spectacular catch in contested coverage, and all of a sudden the offense has life. We saw that in 2019. I think in 2020, that's going to be very, very critical, because he is the team's number one wide receiver. I expect him to step up and do big things. So that's kind of my X-factor player there, Ryan. And ultimately, for the Ultimate Division crossover, we've covered the Denver Broncos here today, ladies and gentlemen. And if you guys missed Mondays, we recap the Kansas City Chiefs with Ryan Tracy. Tomorrow's episode, we're going to be talking with your boy Q. We're going to be analyzing the Raiders from an AFC West division standpoint. So, ladies and gentlemen, we will see you tomorrow for another continuation of our Ultimate Division crossover.